You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge
podge. Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge podge.
Yeah, there's a modge podge. Whole modge podge of rumors.
This is a transfer modge podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Extra Time Radio here in New York City. David Goss hosting as Andrew Wiebe is off into the distance. And joining me today is Mr. Ben Bear and Mr. Houston himself, Kalen Carr. He's got a Houston hat on.
I'm ready. Rivalry week.
I think you went out and got a fake tan so your skin is nice and orange. So you got that glow going. It's Heineken Rivalry Week. We are so excited about this. 3 Rivalry Week games coming up this weekend along with a bunch of other games. We'll talk midweek soccer. We'll talk to Tommy McNamara and Luis Robles back-to-back. Tommy McNamara got up, left. Luis Robles walked in. It was very peaceful. It was very kind.
That's nice.
I mean, that's what you expect from 2 just legends.
It's also early in the week, too.
Yeah, so you don't think it heats up till later on?
Yeah, you got to get closer to the weekend.
It's about peaks and rises
and
making sure you peak at the right time.
Can't get too juiced on Tuesday.
Can't get too juiced on Tuesday. We got pretty juiced on Wednesday, though. A bunch of midweek action. Let's start with Seattle, Orlando. Out in Seattle, a 1-1 draw. Seattle leading for 89 minutes. What was it, 93 minutes?
93 minutes.
93 minutes, and then Orlando gets the late goal off the free kick. You thought this was deserved. I thought Seattle had plenty of chances and should have finished this game off earlier.
I'm not saying they didn't have chances. I'm saying Carlos Rivas should have had 2 goals. And after Seattle scored the goal about 20 minutes in, they didn't really do anything to, you know, control the game at all. They weren't controlling the game. It was pretty even for most of the game. And then I think Orlando had the majority of the possession, majority of the chances the last 20 minutes or so.
I disagree with the chances, but I agree with the possession. The goal did come through Will Bruin, who's wearing this, like, arm brace thing. And we got a tweet from someone in the middle of the night that said, hot take. Bionic arm Will Bruin is the best goal scorer in MLS. He's better than regular Will Bruin. That's a hot take.
I'm always down for Will Bruin. He's my boy. But aren't you a notorious hater of Seattle, Ben? Isn't that kind of
I'm not a hater of this? I'm not a hater of Seattle. They're a hater of me.
Kalen just
throws
paper into the fire. For Seattle, it's been a little bit of a downtime. Obviously not the performance they want going into a rivalry week game. Both these teams, huge games this weekend. Let's talk about another midweek game, Minnesota-Portland. It ended with 10 men on both sides, a 3-2 game. Minnesota gets the win at home against the Portland Timbers. Abu Dunladi and Sebastian Blanco laying on the ground. They both kicked out at each other. They both get sent off. And defensively, this game was a bit of a chaotic one.
I would say so. You know, Christian Ramirez scores again, greatest American goal scorer.
Thank you. That's what I've been saying.
You know, on that play, you know, the two center backs were not talking to each other, Roy Miller and Moby Okugo. It was literally just like the Red Sea, just parted wide open for Kevin Molino to place that through ball.
And I know you love Ramirez takes a long first touch.
Yeah, just terrible which makes the goal look so much better than it should have been.
It's the Jim Edmonds play.
It should have been a little for Grayford, like, you know, just a first touch, a little right in front of him and just finish it easily. But instead, he pops it up and hits it with the outside of his right foot.
I've been getting a lot of comments on videos saying that he should be getting called up for this Gold Cup team. Where do you guys stand on that?
I was first to say that about 7 months ago, before MLS season even
started. I would have liked to have seen him instead of Chris Wondolowski.
Shouldn't the best American goal scorer in MLS always be in the rotation for the U.S. national team striker squad?
Yeah, my only knock on him was just volume. You know, he's only been in MLS for a half a season, not even. So I think, you know, this for me, he needs to continue to do it. You need to see some longevity, consistency, and then maybe January.
But it's not like he's a college kid who's never played. Like, he scored in the pros before this year. He just didn't score in MLS.
He's also not, like, exactly a young player anymore.
Yeah, he's 26.
He's 26, so, you know.
So you got to get him in.
So, I mean, if you're going to wait a season or two to see how he does in MLS, guess what? He's going to be 28. By the time the next World Cup rolls around, he's going to be 31. You need to see what he is right now.
Sounds like a great goal scorer off the bench. These two teams, Seattle and Portland, will face off at 10 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2 on Sunday for Heineken Rivalry Week. That game moved because of a heat wave that's rolling through Portland. I didn't even know they had heat waves.
Yeah,
in
the Pacific
Northwest.
It was always just like 80 and sunny in the summer.
And then it was just raining all
winter. There's
one
nice week a year up there, and you're like, every time I've had good luck and gone to Seattle and Portland in these times, and I'm always like, why don't I live here? And then people are like, come back another time. It's not always like this.
Yeah, now it's a heat wave immediately. This is going to be a huge game. We know it is. These two are probably, is this the biggest or best rivalry in Major League Soccer? Both of you are giving me a look right now. You don't want to feed the hype, but you know it's true.
It has the most history, for sure. But I actually think the best game is going to be Houston-Dallas.
He's jumping the shark and getting there early.
But we'll get to that one.
We'll get to that one in a second. For this one, Sebastian Blanco suspended. Seems like Leon Ridgewell's injured. Seattle needs a win. Portland, I think, has the worst record over the last 10 games.
Been pretty bad.
Yeah, they've only gotten 8 points over their last 10 games. Worse than Minnesota. Worse in Major League Soccer. What do you expect to see from this one, Osa?
I mean, Portland's at home. You know, I think they're going to try and push the game. I think, you know, with Darren Aspria in there, I think he provides a little bit more width than what they get from Blanco. You know, with Blanco in there, just seems like he wants to push to the middle the whole time. Kind of takes up Valeri's space. You know, it's not exactly like Nagby's, you know, hugging the touchline either. So with Aspria in, I think it could provide a little bit of a different element. I haven't been impressed by Fernando Adi lately. I think he was trying to push around the Minnesota backline last night. Didn't really work out for him. His touch wasn't great.
The miss versus Colorado last night?
Yeah, the miss versus, that was terrible.
Oh, my God.
You know, I think he really, I mean, he always kills Seattle, so maybe this is time for him to get back in form.
For two teams that are struggling, is this the type of game you want? Because you know you're going to get up for it anyway?
Absolutely. It's sort of, you kind of just push the other one to the side because this game is so big. It does have the history. You're thinking more about the last times you've played each other, and so a guy like Adi, is, in his mind, he's not going to be thinking about that miss 2 weeks ago. He's going to be thinking about those goals that he scored against Seattle, how they should be fearing him. And this is the type of game that can turn a season for you a little bit, to give you some momentum. Of course, you're going to have the crowd behind you. I give Portland the edge in this one. Obviously, they're always strong at home, but I think especially partly because they haven't had the form they've needed, this is a chance for them to come out and really try and get back on track.
And show those fans who we know in the past, when things haven't been going well, they're still there supporting, but they've said things, they've made TIFOs. This is a chance to get out in front of them and make sure that they're happy. Two other games in midweek, the LA Galaxy 3-1 win over Colorado. The Jack McBean era has, of course, obviously begun. Two goals for him. And DC United, a 2-1 win over a full-strength Atlanta squad after going down 1-0. DC United 2-0-0 against Atlanta. Patrick Nyarko, star of the show.
They should just play against Atlanta every week.
But he just said Portland turnaround win. I mean, this is a big win for DC United.
Yeah, I mean, when you haven't scored an open play goal like in a month and a half, and then you scored two in one game, it should provide some sort of boost. I mean, they still need to figure out what it's just one game. It's a long season. I don't know. Looking at their last 10 games, you wouldn't say, oh, like, this is a team that we should expect more from.
But if Nyarko's coming into form, that could be huge for DC. That could be something that could turn things around for them.
All I'm going to say is Miguel Amarone. I love him. His first touch is class. You should vote for him for the MLS All-Star game on MLSsoccer.com.
Or in the MLS app.
Or in the MLS app, which is a great tool.
So download the MLS app. It'll help you follow Heineken Rivalry this week. Let's talk about that. It starts off Friday night, El Capitan, FC Dallas at the Houston Dynamo, 9 p.m. Eastern time on Unimas and Facebook. And Kalen, now you get to go. Now you get to roll. But you played in Houston. We'll talk about that. But you went down to Houston recently once again for the movement, your video piece. You had a chance to talk to Wilmer Cabrera, talk about what's going on down there.
Yeah, I haven't been down to Houston in quite a little while, to be honest. And so it was good to go back, catch up, see some guys, familiar faces, of course, Boniak and Rico and Tyler Derrick and some of these guys.
And the Boniak twins?
The Boniak twins, yeah, they're on the video. So if you don't have a reason to watch it, it's on MLSsoccer.com now. But I got to sit down with Wilmer for quite a while and talk to him about his journey from RGV FC, their USL affiliate, and his path to MLS. And I was so impressed by him. You know, he talked about bringing up young players. I think the other interesting note is if you look at the Houston teams that I played for versus the teams now, there's a big difference and a lot more Latin flavor into the team. They've brought in a lot of guys from Honduras, Central America, South America as well. And so I think they've done so well with guys like Mauro Manotas, Elise, Kyoto. He's unlocked Kubo Torres, of course. So that's what I'm most excited about. He's really got these guys. You see them running over to him when they score goals. It's very rare that you see Jura and some other guys maybe shushing their coach. And this is one where you can feel the group, even though there's a lot of them, so it's tough to manage those pieces. You can feel that they have something special back in that group right now.
You've been around with
the other guy you see that with just is Pareja.
Yeah,
guys,
I was about
guys
to say.
Running over.
You've been around Pareja now for a few years with FC Dallas. Is there similarities? Is there obvious differences? Like when you see the two work, when you hear the players that play under them talk?
I think it's very similar, and I can't help but see that Houston's maybe followed Dallas's lead a little bit as far as the profile, the experience, and the connection that he's able to foster with young players and young Latin players in particular. Pareja's been the standard bearer for that, and I think his squad is really, as far as bringing young players along, of course, that story has been told very well, but... when I watch Dallas play, I think they're the best team in the league, so I think that's why it'll be an interesting match for Houston to test themselves. Rudy, I think, is underrated. I've always seen his talent. Even when he was playing in Portland, I felt like people were maybe overlooking him. Even in Portland's championship run, he had a couple really important moments. His combination of pace, athleticism, skill. The finishing has been a bit inconsistent, but even if you look at his numbers, I know Ben has. it's still been good. It just hasn't crossed over to the level of expectations maybe other people have until this point.
For these two squads, number two versus number four. Houston's number two. Dallas is number four. Do you think Houston's for real? Because they like to play in transition. They struggle on the road. It seems like when teams game plan for them, they struggle, but they have talent. Do you think this is a team that's a contender to go to an MLS Cup?
I don't think so. I mean,
he's got the hat on.
Literally just talking about this, just waxing poetic about Houston. And
yeah.
Like, nah.
But what I like about them is, for a while there hasn't really been a plan in place as far as how are we building something going forward.
Right.
So now I feel like this is a team that can build towards that.
Okay.
Now, I think they are a playoff team. I think they'll get to the playoffs. I think when you come up against more experienced sides in the playoffs, like a Dallas, like a Portland, like a Seattle, that may be where they run into some problems, but you have to go through that as a group and learn from that. But, anything could happen in MLS Cup playoffs, of course, but I think it's more that they have good young base and a system in place and a feeder system now with RGV for players to really develop and come to the first team. So I was really impressed going down there.
Houston's at home. That means they're going to win, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
That's all they do.
Also, you said two versus four, but if you look at points per game, that kind of flipped. Dallas is number one in the West.
This is why I bring Ben in.
And what about those points Houston was supposed to have down in L.A. last weekend, huh?
Oh, wow. And now we get to the controversy.
But people don't like VAR, but, if we would have had it, guess what would have happened? Houston
would
have won.
It's coming down the road in MLS. The next game in Heineken Rivalry Week, just the next game of the schedule on the next day, Saturday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox and Fox Deportes. Yes, that's Big Fox. The New York Red Bulls host NYCFC. We talked with a lot of these players on Tuesday. Tommy McNamara, Luis Robles. Coming up later in the show, the Red Bulls dominate this rivalry. Is anything going to change?
I mean, the Red Bulls haven't been playing great. My prevailing thought here is, if you're an NYCFC fan, you have to start seeing something from your team has been one of the best five teams in the league since the start of last year.
2 years now.
You can't get results against your rival. It's just disheartening. I'm a Mets fan. The Yankees, this didn't really happen when the Mets and Yankees first started playing. But let's say the Yankees just keep on beating me. It just beats you down. Even if your team's playing well, you just can't be that team that you want to beat the most. That team where other opposing fans are coming at you and being like, you guys stink.
And these styles don't help for NYCFC because Red Bulls are home. They're going to high press. NYCFC is going to try and play out of the back. Patrick Vieira will not step away from that. And then they just make mistakes in the back. We saw Atlanta do it to them a few weeks ago. It's going to be similar. So unless you get a moment of brilliance that puts you up a goal.
I mean, they also beat Atlanta 3-1 a couple months ago.
Right. That's true.
Same situation.
No, but this
true.
Happened to NYCFC in the playoffs last year too with Toronto.
Yeah.
So it is a I respect Patrick that he's going to. Well, of course, who doesn't respect Patrick here? But I think they do need to be a little bit more pragmatic in points in the game to be able to play a little bit more direct, especially in a rivalry where they haven't had success.
I think what we should be looking out for in this game is that is Alex Ring and Yongo Herrera. In the past, they haven't really had these kind of players in the midfield to combat, you know, the strong Red Bulls midfield and to really, you know, put their foot on the game and use some physicality. You know, they've had guys like Pirlo, you know, not really physical, but, you know, and maybe passing too much out of the back. I think Ring and Herrera will be, they'll know what to do in those kind of situations.
Yongel Herrera, special young player. It's going to be an amazing Heineken rivalry week. Friday night, FC Dallas at Houston, 9 p.m. Eastern time on Unimas and Facebook.com. Then the Red Bulls host NYCFC at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fox and Fox Deportes. And then on Sunday, it all gets finished with the oldest rivalry, as Kalen said, in this MLS. It is Portland Timbers hosting Seattle Sounders at 10 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2. And then a ton of games on Saturday night from 7 p.m. Eastern time to 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, kicking off Colorado at Atlanta, DC United at Philly, Montreal at Columbus, Vancouver at Minnesota, Orlando at Chicago, SKC at LA Galaxy, and RSL at San Jose. SKC at LA Galaxy, this is one that interested you, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on MLS Live. This is a big game maybe for LA. They're playing this. They're missing a lot of pieces. They got a good result against Colorado. They got maybe a lucky result against Houston. Now they go off against the number one team in the West.
Yeah, I mean, SKC has been one of the top teams in the league so far. And all I want to see is Alisson Giroud against this back line that has been impenetrable so far this year and just see what he can do. LA has been, you know, playing really well of late, better than I would say probably SKC.
Interesting.
If you look at the results.
Right.
I just want to see Alisson Giroud against Aiko Parra and all the, I mean, yeah. Zardes needs to start getting going if they're really going to be a contender again.
Unless Jack McBean just scores two goals a game, and then everything is good. Another one I'm interested in, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, Columbus hosting Montreal. Justin Miram did terrible things to that Montreal team the last time they faced off, and I'm sure they all still have nightmares. Ambrose Ayongo's out for the season, so that backline hasn't strengthened.
And Daniel Lovitz got injured on Wednesday night in the Canadian Championship, so they have no left backs left.
The Canadian Championship, which we refuse to mention. Just kidding. We'll mention it in the mailbag. But Jamiley's here, so it's a different Montreal team as well, a different setup. Whatever it is that you're watching, use the MLS app to follow everything else that's going on. It's going to be an amazing weekend of Heineken Rivalry Week. Now let's go. Let's talk to Tommy McNamara and Luis Robles.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Once upon a time, not long ago, when people wore pajamas and lived life slow, where laws were stern and justice stood, and people were behaving like they ought to good, there lived a little boy who was misled.
Back now at Extra Time Radio, hanging out at the digital headquarters here in New York City with Tommy McNamara, Luis Robles, coming right up. That's because it is Heineken Rivalry Week, a big game coming up this week in the New York Derby. It is huge. Tommy, thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're in Midtown. I've read that you, if you weren't playing soccer, you would be in finance. Do you walk around these streets and see all the guys in suits and think, that could have been me?
Yeah, I see, a good amount of my friends live in the city and they work in, you know, finance, different things, consulting, financial analysts, so... Yeah, could be my life. Maybe it is in the future. Who knows?
Do you ever think about that?
Does that actually sound interesting to you?
Yeah, you didn't sound like sound juiced about that.
Not particularly. No, I may be qualified for it from an education standpoint, but no, I love playing soccer, and that's been my one and only passion. So going to try to make it last as long as I can.
So the education side, for those of you who don't know, started at Brown, went to Clemson. You're a dual degree guy, I believe?
I did my undergrad, but no, I haven't finished my master's.
Oh.
One semester, three classes left. That's it.
When do those three classes get done?
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm supposed to be down there to do it, and obviously that can't happen. So
yeah, that's a little bit.
I'm trying to figure it out.
It's a little bit tough at this point. Tell me about that transfer, though, of that time and what you were up to and why you chose to do what you did.
Yeah, so I chose when I entered Brown to graduate a semester early in case for the draft I would finish college. But then I got hurt my junior year, so I needed to redshirt. And then I had to leave Brown because I had graduated. You can't be a graduate student in the Ivy League and competing athletically. And then so I went down to Clemson. It was a great program. I got coached again with Mike Noonan, who coached me my freshman year at Brown, and it was a great experience.
What, when you entered and you were like, I want to graduate early so I could go play professional soccer,
so you knew.
Was everyone else at Brown University like, dude, it's an Ivy League, like, people don't go pro?
No, I mean, Dylan Remick went to Brown. Yeah. He was in my class. Jeff Lerenowitz as well.
Have you seen Greg Wallace around here? Because
I have, yes, okay. Another Brown guy.
There you go.
I know, yeah.
What do you think about this rivalry here? 1:30 p.m. on Saturday. Of course, anybody who wants to watch it can do so on Fox, Fox Deportes. You're at West Nyack, New York. This is kind of your home. You come with New York first season. New York Derby means what to you? What do you think about it?
Originally, I don't think we really knew what to think of it because it was the first game in the first year. But immediately from the first game, it was just wild. I mean, the fans really got behind it. The stadiums have been packed every game we played. It's been one of, if not the most exciting games of the season the past couple of years.
As like a local New Yorker, do you have to tell everyone else, like, this is the deal, this is what it means?
Not really. The fans are the ones that have really, you know, driven this. And, you know, as a club, obviously we want to do well and we see it. But from a fan's perspective, I think it means so much to them and we want to do well for them.
So it hasn't been the best start for NYCFC in this derby. Does that weigh on you guys at all? Do you get reminded of that by the fans, by anybody in the front office, by yourself? I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's something that we've brought up for sure, and I'm sure we're going to address it again coming into this weekend's game. But it's not something that weighs on us. It's not like this heavy cloud where we feel like, you know, whatever. But, yeah, it's been addressed.
You have two goals in this rivalry.
I do,
You've done pretty well. I mean, unfortunately, I went back and looked. I think those are in losses, unfortunately. But that's not –
Yeah, both of them.
But yep. were those special to you in their own way, kind of in this place, in this history? You have now at least the name and continue to make one?
Yeah, especially the first one, because that was our first game at home, and it put us up 1-0. So, you know, I was very excited about that one originally, and the game didn't turn out quite as how we wanted. But it does mean a lot to me. I mean, we you know, especially myself, but the whole team, we want to win these games and we want to give this back to the fans.
When you came back, like, what did it mean that you knew you were going to be a part of the first season in New York?
Yeah, it was very exciting. When Chivas folded, I was, you know, hoping that I would end up in New York, and it took a little bit of an indirect route. But, yeah, I just thought it was going to be so cool, and I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, you know, was the city going to take to it? I thought yes, but you never know, and It's been awesome. I'm so happy to be a part of this club and represent this club.
Jason Kreis, the coach in the first year. Now it's Patrick Vieira. We don't have to explain why.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you brought up Chivas, and you're in a nerd MLS.
Yeah, that's
so we got to go there first.
Go ahead.
Chivas. Like, what was Chivas like?
It was the best place for me to get drafted to. You know, Wilmer Cabrera was the coach. He's obviously doing well in Houston now. He really believed in me, and he understood me as a player when he drafted me. And so he was really open and willing to give me chances. And so throughout the preseason, I was able to work my way into the starting lineup. And, you know, I was grateful for that. It was a great place to be. Unfortunately, I did my ACL, but, you know, I was lucky that I was able to play those six games and kind of show a little bit of what I was about in the league for what was next.
We love Wilmer. We love Albert Elise. We love this Houston Dynamo team. We're not shy about saying that. But I'm going to go back to what you said about him understanding you as a player. Help the people at home understand you as a player. What does that mean when you say that? What did he understand?
Yeah, that, you know, looks can be a little bit deceiving. I think when you originally see me on the field, a lot of people just kind of like, oh, he's not a soccer player. But, you know, there's more behind that. There's more behind my brain. I'm a smart player that does a lot of little things that add up over the course of the game and generally help the team be successful. And you kind of have to be looking for those things to understand that. It doesn't pop out at you.
Are you sick of the he doesn't look like a soccer player? Has it ended?
I don't think it's ended.
You cut your hair. Does that have anything to do with it?
No, not at all. No. Just wanted to change it, but it is what it is. I don't really care.
What are the little things? Tell me the little things that, like, you are thinking about or maybe not thinking about that just kind of come innate to you.
Yeah. You know, one thing's moving off the ball, both to get myself in dangerous positions, but also to draw defenders maybe to me to free somebody else up. You know, little things like being smart tactically in terms of, you know, keeping the ball in the corner. That's an easy one. But, you know, slowing down the game when it's time to slow down the game, or speeding it up when it's time to speed up the game, things of that nature.
Guys, those types of things are things you hear from top players. Pirlo, Villa, those guys talk about that. When you talk to them about soccer, do you see it on a similar level? Do you see the things that make them successful and think, that's what I've always been doing?
Yeah, I mean, they're two of the best players in the world. I think they've done that and more. But, yeah, I try to learn from them. They're both very intelligent players, which is why they played at the levels they played at. And it's been great having them in the team.
What have you picked up from them? What do you see in them that you replicate? I mean, what about just playing with them is special? Because, you know, I was at the game on Saturday. David Villa is just – he as a player, we've talked about it many times in the show. It's just a joy to watch him.
Yeah, I think what's been best for me is to see – how their work ethic behind the scenes and the way they can carry themselves and conduct themselves behind the scenes. So just a general from a week-to-week basis, they come ready to compete every day. They're prepared. They're not, you know what I mean? They eat healthy. They do all the right things consistently. And in doing so, they've set themselves up to perform on the weekends.
Did you watch MLS and follow MLS before you became a player?
Not particularly growing up, but when I got into college and realized, okay, if I'm going to be playing at the next level, more likely than not, it's going to be in MLS, I started following a lot more frequently in college.
The debate this week was, is Villa the best player in MLS history? And I just want to see if you chose, you wanted to weigh in on whether or not Villa is the best MLS player of all time.
Like I said, it's hard. I haven't watched the league from start to beginning, but he's an incredible player.
You're going to be with a lot of great MLS players here perhaps soon with the Gold Cup roster. I mean, that was an exciting moment for a lot of people to see your name there. I'm sure you know you're a little bit of a cult hero for a lot of us out there who maybe don't look like soccer players or who aren't actually soccer players. What did that mean to you? What are you thinking about in terms of the Gold Cup?
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. You know, but it's just the preliminary roster. So we'll see what happens over the next week when I think the final list should be put out and see. Hopefully I'm a part of it, which would be very exciting and be a very proud moment for me and to be a part of the team and to represent the country. Yeah.
There have been some rumors about Ireland. What was there ever any?
Is there any chance?
Yeah, yeah. Are you a dual national up for grabs here, Tommy?
No, I do have my Irish citizenship. The FA reached out to me back in the summer of 2015, just somebody from there, just to confirm that I was a citizen. And they said, okay, that's good to know. We'll put it in our database or whatever. And that was the only contact I've had with them since. So I guess technically I do still qualify, but... you know, we'll see. I'm hoping to be a part of this roster for the World Cup for sure.
What was – do you get – no? Did you talk to Bruce before the preliminary roster came out?
No, I have not.
So it was a surprise to you?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I got the notification from somebody within the Federation, and then later that night, obviously, it was announced publicly in the friendly game. But, yeah, no, I was not given any heads up really prior to that.
For you, you know, you say we talked about Wilmer understanding you as a player. You look at that roster. Where do you think you project in? What type of player do you think you can be in terms of positional or use at the next level?
Yeah, I think it's good because I have a little bit of variety in my game. I could play out wide, but be coming inside. I can play centrally. I could play off a striker. So I think it helps being able to be a little bit versatile. And I think it's always going to be on the attacking side of things, you know, trying to be dangerous in front of goal, trying to create chances, things of that nature.
So if you get on this roster, and we hope you do, Tommy, West Nyack is going to be – they're going to have a parade down the block. I mean, when you go home, are people like, that's Tommy McNamara?
No, not really. Maybe if I'm going to see my cousin's soccer games or something like that, all the little kids kind of know. But generally when I go home, I just go home and see my family, and that's about it.
The new training center is going to be 2 miles from your parents' house?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Is there such thing as too much family time? Does that exist?
Well, the good thing is I don't still live with my parents. That was like a long time ago. No, there's definitely not too much family time. I love my family, and they all love soccer, which is great, and they support me and come to every single game. And so, you know, I'm very grateful to be a part of it.
How many tickets are you having to ask for per game? I mean, you have to dip into the Tommy McNamara fund to, like, fund all these people that want to come see you play?
I haven't had to do that yet, no. Thankfully, my parents decided to get season tickets because they wanted to sit in a specific part of the the stadium so they can see the game a little bit better. But yeah, the tickets range from, you know, a handful some games to quite a bit in other games. Just depends.
So we know you're a local guy. We wanted to give you a little bit of trivia here. I've only been here for 6 years. Dave is the lifelong.
I'm from Long Island.
Long Island, so. New York.
Not any better than West Nyack.
So let's see. What are your hints for people when they come to New York City? Like, let's say you have family coming in from outside. They're going to come visit the city.
No, your friends come. Where do you take them first?
Yeah.
What's the number one thing you have to do?
The number one thing I have to do. You know what I do like to do is, because it's right by where I'm at, is go to the High Line. I don't know. It's nice. It's a little bit different. It's something different from the city. When you get up there, it's quieter, a little bit more remote.
So you live in the city?
Yep.
And you commute up to training every day?
Yeah.
And what made you be like, I want to spend that? I want to make sure I live in the city?
Yeah, the commute's fine. It's not very long. You know, I love the city. It's so much fun. And it just, I have so many friends living in the city that it's nice when I do get some time off. It's really easy to kind of connect with them.
So you're rolling what? The C, the 2-3? What are you heading uptown?
We're getting deep cut New York.
Yeah.
No, I drive up to training.
Oh, there you go. See,
when you're a professional athlete, you can afford
MTA
a spot.
MTA life.
I'm street parking.
You're street parking in Chelsea?
It's not bad.
That's not bad.
It's easy.
So what's your go-to bagel place and bagel order? This is how I judge all people.
Yeah. The go-to bagel order, it's very rare, only occasionally. But it's
no carbs?
It's a ham, egg, and cheese.
Nice.
Salt, pepper, ketchup as well.
Oh, there you go. I would throw a little hot sauce on that.
Tommy
Mack. Watch him Saturday, 1:30 p.m., Fox and Fox Deportes, the New York Derby. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's keep it rolling with the red side of New York. Luis Robles sitting down with us. Tommy Mack vacating the seat. Keeping it rolling, man. How's it feel? You after Tommy, but you're number one in the New York Derby, man. You got all the wins, so you got to
feel good.
Tommy's
a good guy. I like Tommy a lot.
How many?
Just when he's not on the field against us.
How many NYCFC players, like, do you guys ever hang out? You're all in the New York area.
Or is this like Anchorman, where you're on two sides and you're going to brawl?
No. I mean, off the field, it's no problem having a Heineken with them. Not a big deal.
Oh, on brand. Well
like
done.
That,
huh? Yes, Heineken rivalry.
This is
week.
Why. I've heard things about you. They're like, Luis knows what he's doing. He could be a super agent if he wanted to.
Sneaky.
This is why.
End. Yes, Heineken rivalry week. In case we didn't need a reminder, you can watch these guys once again. 1:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox and Fox Deportes on Saturday. Let's talk about the rivalry. I mentioned it. You guys have had a lot of success in this thing. That has to feel good, because when New York City FC came in, there was this question immediately that is inevitable. Who is going to be the quote-unquote king of New York? And people want a winner. Right now, that's you guys in this rivalry.
Sure, but ultimately, we're still striving for something that eludes both of us. Now, of course, our history goes a lot longer than theirs, so it doesn't reflect as favorably. But at the end of the day, the rivalry means a lot. MLS Cup is going to mean a lot more. Because imagine this scenario. We're 9-1 in the rivalry, but they're able to win MLS Cup before us. That sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah, no.
So with everything that's played out the way that it has been fun being on the winning side. But ultimately, it's gonna the race is gonna be who gets the MLS Cup first.
What if you played in the playoffs? Like, where would that?
That sounds perfect for MLS and for television.
Yes, it does.
Last year, that scenario almost played out. We were thinking, man, if we could get past this round and they can get past Toronto, it's this perfect matchup. Yet we both didn't get past our round, and it didn't work out. But inevitably, that's what's gonna happen. As you look at their organization, they've done such a great job of developing their brand, continuing to put the best product on the field. And when you look at this season, they've made some very shrewd moves. And they brought in players that fit their style of play, that have adapted to the league quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's boded well for them.
When you look around the league, I mean, it sounds like you know intimately what they did, why they did it, everything. Like, are you a guy who just nerds out on MLS in a general sense as a competitor? You want to know what everybody else is up to? You know the guys that are coming in just on an educational basis for yourself?
I think it's a little bit of both. Of course, you're going to pay a little more attention to what they're doing just because of them being there.
Yeah, yeah.
But ultimately, I'm just a huge fan of Major League Soccer, right? It's a privilege to be able to play, especially for the New York Red Bulls. But I really feel I came in at an amazing time. In 2012, when I was able to come and join the league, you just see the excitement, the momentum that's being built, and it's grown, and it continues to grow. And I think we're in a very exciting stage of this sport. And as we push forward to the next stage, whatever that may be, to see the new franchises come in, to see the stadiums being built, to see the type of players and the quality go up, it's been not only a privilege, but a humbling experience.
Did you want to play in Major League Soccer? You went over to Europe. That's the dream for a lot of players. Was there a thought that at some point you wanted to play here?
I don't want to speak too hyperbolically and say that Europe was the dream. I think ultimately the dream was to be a professional soccer player. And when it came down to deciding between signing with DC United or signing in Germany, I felt at that time in my life going to Germany made sense because I wasn't married. I didn't have any kids. And it's not as if I could fast forward and say at 28 years old, now I'm married, I have a couple of kids. Just because of an opportunity to go to Germany, it's going to be a no-brainer. No, you are now thinking with a different mindset.
Yeah, for sure.
Whereas when I'm 22 years old, I got nothing to lose. Let's go try it. But ultimately, being an American, I wanted to be back in America playing for a team in Major League Soccer.
So you come in 2012. It's 5 years later now. What has changed? What is the progression that you've seen? I mean, you're obviously paying attention to the details, experiencing them intimately. Mm-hmm. What's been the progression in that time period?
I can't say intimately about the league when I left in 07 because I hadn't experienced
right.
it. But at least from the periphery, you could see, this was pre-Beckham, that they were floundering a little bit. Now all of a sudden with Beckham coming in and the introduction of designated players, they've grown the league into what it is today. And now as we look forward to where the league's going in the future – all of a sudden, you have to look back and contrast where it was and where it is and where it could be. And when it came to making that decision, it was a lot easier. Now, when you look at Tyler Adams coming up through high school and going through the academy, it's not as easy to just say, oh, you know what? I want to go to Europe right off the bat, because you see the establishment, how it continues to grow. You see the product, how it continues to get better. And all of a sudden, the appeal is higher than it's ever been before. And that's a win for Major League Soccer, because ultimately we want to be one of the best leagues in the world. In order to do that, we have to continue to develop our players, but maintain our players. And as we continue to do that and grow the product, not only will the league be better from a quality standpoint, but then we're going to compete internationally at a higher level than we ever have before.
You sound, Luis, like somebody who is thinking about a future in this game after playing. Am I off with that? I mean,
I think ultimately I'm a fan of Major League Soccer. And when I look back at my experience, and I don't know how much longer I'm going to play, but more than anything, I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be able to play.
Tyler Adams is standing outside of this door right now.
How young does he look?
Yeah, like? I know. I know, man. It's crazy.
When we signed him and he was 16, 17 years old and his parents were dropping off for training, I would be in the locker room. I'd look over. I'm thinking, man, I'm on the wrong side of 30. This guy's not even 20 yet, right?
Like, he's barely driving.
Yeah, there's all this Heineken promotion. He can't touch the stuff.
How do you interact with seriously, a 17-year-old comes into the locker room. You're a professional. You work with now a teenager. How do you interact with him, like, as a teammate on a similar level?
I think when I assess where I'm at in my career, I understand that there's a big responsibility to not only bring the best product on the field when it comes to my individual performance, but as a leader to help guys understand what it takes to make us the best team possible. Now, his situation is a little different because there's not too many 18-year-olds that can come in, compete, and actually be one of the best players on the field.
Yep.
So I think for me, my approach towards Tyler is to help him learn, to help him develop as a leader, but understanding that we have something special here. And so if I can help equip him in any way possible, if I can help guide him in any way possible, that's where my responsibility lies.
Do you have an anecdote for us? Is there a time where maybe he came and asked for something, or you noticed something, or maybe he just did something that blew you away? Because we talked to him on the show like 2 weeks ago, and we walked out of there like, I don't know if I'm mature as this guy right now, and I'm 30 years old.
Well, man, he did a good job of fooling you. Huh?
Yeah. He's polished. He's very polished.
Also, you don't know how mature he is.
Yeah,
it's not that hard.
Yeah,
I can't speak to that, Dave. But I can say that the very first time that I ever trained with Tyler Adams, he was 16 at the time. So it was a couple years ago. He wasn't signed yet. He was just, I think, on break from the U17 residency program. And when he came into training, he'd never trained with us before. And yet the fearlessness that he exhibited on that day stuck with me. And I looked forward to the day that we were going to be teammates, and And it ended up being very quickly after, very shortly after that experience, and that same fearlessness he continues to possess. And what I'm hoping, at least, is as he develops as a player, that fearlessness turns into leadership. And that sort of leadership is going to resonate. It's going to permeate no matter what locker room he's in, and he's going to make a difference.
We had Bradley Brett Phillips in here a little bit ago.
What a guy, huh?
Yeah, he's great. We're just hanging out talking with him, and he had some similar stories about Tyler. But what can this guy be? What is he now? Because you just said it. He's like one of the best players on the field now as an 18-year-old. In his first real season of being a sustained pro at the MLS level, he did it in USL last year, no doubt about it, went out and won a championship. Mm-hmm. But when he steps on the field, he's not an 18-year-old. He's not a young guy. He's not a guy who looks young. He's a guy who's making a difference.
Yeah, when I look at Tyler on the field, at least from my vantage point, 18 is not even something that comes into the mind. If he's on the field, it's because he's good enough to play right now and he's good enough to make a difference. And so the expectations are quite high. And that has nothing to do with where he's at. Now, of course, when you take a step back, you realize that the approach is different, right? Because you're fostering something, you're growing something. And so time is of the essence. However, when you look at Brad, you look at Tyler, you look at Sasha, you look at anyone else, the fact that they're on the field is because we're trying to get a result. And so they have a responsibility. They have a role to play. And that doesn't vary. Now, off the field, when we talk about evaluations and assessing how things are going, the approach will be a little different.
Take away, step away from the Red Bulls, but talking about development as well. Goalkeeping, you're part of what was a time period of like 20 years of golden, you could say, generation of goalkeepers for the U.S. There's question marks right now of where the national team's going, but what that next age group is like. What do you see when you look around Major League Soccer, but also around young goalkeepers?
I'm always going to be a strong advocate for the American goalkeeper. So whether that's Major League Soccer, develop academies really pushing their best product forward. But as the U.S. national team goes through transition, of course, goalkeeping is going to be one of those spots. I am not quite convinced that it's as in flux as at moments it seems. I mean, I still think that Tim plays at a very high level. Brad has been... he's been in a difficult situation over the Middlesbrough, but I know that he's going to come and he's going to make a difference for Atlanta. And now we're talking about a team that's already exciting to watch, and they're going to stabilize themselves in the back in a way that they expect, making such a big, high-profile signing. And I think once he gets that consistency in games under him, he's going to continue to show, the quality of goalkeeper that he is. And he's going to compete in a way that will push Tim, and competition is important, it will push Tim and push every other goalkeeper to a level that's going to benefit the U.S. national team.
We always hear about the quote-unquote goalkeeper union. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that, because it is such a unique position and kind of a – it seems like it would be ripe for sort of that like brotherhood in the sense that you're all watching each other and you're all trying to pick things out and you're thinking about it and the technique and maybe some of the other players on the field can't relate to what you do at times. Mm-hmm. Does the goalkeeper union exist?
Union – seems a bit strong. I think ultimately we understand that there's a lot of stress that comes with the position, and there's a lot of, let's say, fragility as well. And so I can't help but relate to guys when they're in their situations, and if say they're not playing well, I always want to encourage them because I've been there. And if they're playing well, then I just encourage them to stay healthy, stay humble, and continue to work hard. That's my perspective on all of it. I can't speak for everyone else. But being a goalkeeper myself, I can say that we're very insecure creatures. And so anytime I can encourage another goalkeeper, I think how I'd want to be encouraged. So from that standpoint, that's how I approach it.
Fragility, competition. You start every game. You've started every game for a really long time now. Mm. That's not an issue for you.
I wouldn't go as far as saying it's an issue, but nothing about my mindset changes. I don't feel as if I'm guaranteed anything. And when I go into training each and every week, I want to show not only the organization but my teammates that I can make a difference, that by having me on the field, we can win. And so I think that's very important to stay constant. And, of course, all the other stuff, that's just good fortune. I mean, I feel very lucky. I feel very blessed. I think I've been given a great opportunity that I'm grateful for. And so I'm going to continue to do everything that I can to help this organization get to where we want to be. And if that means I'm in goal, great. If that means I'm playing a different role, I'll do everything I can.
Does a streak weigh on you? Do people talk to you about it? Like, you went down against Philly, and everyone was like, the streak.
No, not at all. I mean, that's so out of my control. Honestly, it's not as if I was a six-year-old saying I'm going to be a professional goalkeeper. I wasn't even playing soccer at six. But it's not as if I'm saying, okay, this is a record I want to beat. However, if there's one little anecdote I can give that sort of plays into the situation, my dad grew up in Puerto Rico. And in Puerto Rico, you're either a Mets or a Yankees fan. He was a Yankees fan. And his favorite player growing up, not as in growing up because he predates him, but the guy that he always sort of just was in awe of, Lou Gehrig. There and so the movie that the first movie that I can remember as a kid wasn't a cartoon. It was The Pride of the Yankees. And when we watched that movie, he always would just point out, this guy's about character. He's about character. He's about character. And so for me, in a way, to have a record that is similar to his, I think makes my dad quite happy.
Got a Mets fan right here. I'm just going to throw that out there.
But I love Lou Gehrig. And my dad also loved Lou Gehrig.
How do you not like a guy like Lou Gehrig?
Yeah.
So you mentioned the insecurity part, the mental part of goalkeeping. Mm-hmm. How do you train that? Is there any way to do that? Is there, you know, we always hear about sports psychologists. Have you used one? What do you?
I work with a sports psychologist. My father-in-law has been huge in this regard. I think this is why the fearlessness of Tyler Adams stuck out to me so quickly, is because at 16 years old, there's no way I could have gone into this environment and had this sort of demeanor that he had. And I couldn't help but admire that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, what has changed is I got to a point where I realized you're already good enough because that's why you're here, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
If you weren't good, you wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Yet there was still this in the back of your mind, oh, don't lose this. Don't lose this, right? What could I lose if it doesn't go well? And eventually I just got to the point where I just stopped caring. Now, not in a negative way. Obviously, you care about what you do, but you stop thinking about what you could lose, the fear of losing, the fear of failure. And I got to a point where it's like, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to give my best. I'm going to leave the results. Let it be. I think the most important part is that I prepare well, that I give it my best, and that I do everything I can to honor my teammates. All the other stuff, it's out of my control. Once I realize that I have control over very little, and the things that I can't control, I can just go full force, something clicked, and I'm glad that it did.
You said your dad was a Yankee fan, Yankees-Mets, that's a great rivalry. Mm-hmm. What do you think of, not this one, but what do you think of when you think of rivalries?
I'm hoping that this rivalry has all the makings to be that, but I'm hoping that one day we're going to look at this rivalry and we're going to see it's one of the most prolific rivalries, not only in North America, but in the soccer world.
And you'll have a place in that. And you may have a place for that for a long time. You mentioned, you know, control what you can control. Mm-hmm. I've seen the videos that the Red Bulls have put out with you and your training methods. You look like you could run through this, like, plaster wall right now.
You probably actually could.
I don't run gracefully, that's for
sure.
Well,
you don't have to run gracefully to get through this thing. You just have to have enough force. Goalkeepers play for a long time. How long will Luis Robles play, do you think?
I have no idea. I'm in a good place right now, and I'm grateful for all of it.
Well, there you go. New York Derby, 1:30 p.m. on Saturday. Fox Deportes. Tune in. Luis Robles, Tommy Mack. It'll be a great one. We're looking forward to it. Luis, thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Let me tell you that everything is everything.
Everything is everything.
Everything is everything.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, David Gostin, just Ben Bear, kicked Kaelin Carr out. Luis Robles is gone. Tommy McNamara is gone. Tommy McNamara. He's a cult legend, and he knows he's a cult legend, but he's still not, like, cocky about it, but he, like, knows why. He's like, I don't look like a soccer player, but I'm an unreal soccer player.
I mean, he's from West Nyack, right. So that's already why he's number one in my book. You know, that's very close to where I grew up.
Yeah, of course. Ben Bear could have been Tommy McNamara if things had gone
I mean, I was a star player until I was like 15, and then like once they were like, "Oh, start juggling," I was like, "Oh, okay, I'm done."
That's when they asked at 15 to start juggling.
No, just like I just like everyone else could do like other things, and I literally could only just score goals, which you know I think is very important in my opinion.
Emil Heskey played for.
But I literally couldn't
minutes.
Do anything else, so that was basically it.
Ben Wondolowski Bear, let's go to the Hotmail Hotline, Heineken Rivalry Week style.
ECR Radio, it's the Toronto Ducks back again. Now, you guys know I'm a huge fan of the show, but as being Canadian, I gotta say, you guys are really letting down the Canadian Championship. You guys talk about the small Minnows club, Christos FC, for the U.S. Open Cup, but then you don't even know when the Canadian Championship is. Look, I know we only have 3 teams in the MLS, whereas the U.S. Open Cup have 19, but you guys are really selling Canada short. You guys gotta get on that better. All right, good luck. See you guys.
Ben, save us! Save us!
These are the
Canada.
Kind of these are the kind of voicemails I want to get. Yeah. I mean, we being Goss and Doyle like just miss big parts of MLS, like the MLS community. So yeah, you're 100% right. You know, I picked before this season that Montreal would win the Canadian Championship because Tableau would be just doing crazy stuff.
Yeah,
which wasn't the case really last night because he didn't play. But I think. you know, Toronto gets a draw on the road, so they're looking pretty good going back home. So I may not be right. The other 3 guys may be right. I think they all picked Toronto.
Second leg coming next Tuesday, June 27th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. We're definitely going to watch that one, right?
Oh, 100%.
Let's go.
I mean, I would.
Let's go.
All right.
I think we're going to be there. There's a chance we'll be there. Canadian Duck, let us know. Let's move on.
So I have a question. It's not necessarily a hot take, but what's going on with Jordan Morris? That's my question. I mean, I understand that he had an injury earlier in the year, but it seems like he's – I mean, we don't want to rag on anybody, but it seems like his performance has been pretty different, let's just say it that way, than last year's, obviously, you know, the Rookie of the Year performance. So is it a thing? I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to be a thing, but is the Jordan Morris slump, is that a legit thing? So I'd love to hear what you guys think.
He got cut off.
Well, people tell me that form isn't a thing, but on Twitter and stuff. But I don't really believe that. I think form is a thing, and I think he's, you know, out of form. I think he, as the caller said, he came in injured after he got injured in the March camp. He never really – couldn't really get healthy for a couple months. Now he's healthy. But he's out of form and he's inconsistent. And you saw last night, he had a couple times where he broke it out into the open. And he took a long touch and it ran right to Bendick. Last year against the Rapids, he puts that away. Against Dallas, he puts that away. Against he just out of form.
Now remember his first year, there was that whole phase when like he was the guy before Lodeiro came. Dempsey was out, and he had that whole stretch in the summer when it was like 6-7 weeks where he was scoring goals every week. Maybe he needs that element of, like, puts it on his shoulders. Maybe there's a little bit too much for him of, like, it's Dempsey's show, it's Lodeiro's show, I don't want to get in the way.
The whole attack is just disconnected to me. I'll have an article on MLSsoccer.com later talking about this.
Well, that,
check back when we listen to this.
That's what we'll look forward to. A little bit more Seattle talk, kind of.
What's up, Extra Time Radio? Neil from Connecticut here, just finishing up a night of MLS Live midweek action. And my hot take is... in light of what happened 3 years ago with Landon Donovan, I don't think Clint Dempsey's making the Russia squad next year for the World Cup. I just think his time has come. It's sad to say. P.S. New York is blue. Come on, City. Bye-bye.
Clint Dempsey, does he get Landon Donovan? I mean, Bruce Arena's not going to keep the cards
in the
chest.
We all know why Klinsmann didn't bring Landon Donovan. I don't think that's going to be the issue. I think, he is getting up there. He is not performing at a level that you would like, especially considering. I mean, we've talked about the U.S. striker pool and how it's deep. But, like, I mean, I don't think Bruce is going to bring a guy that hasn't been playing in qualifiers. And, you know, it's really Bobby Wood and Josie.
And Jordan Morris.
And Jordan Morris. And that's really it. Those are the guys he's relied upon.
Oh, now we'll see Dom Dwyer. We'll get a shot.
Yeah, I mean, if one of these guys breaks out on the Gold Cup, Dwyer or, I forgot, Sapong on the... Dwyer, Sapong, one of those guys breaks out in the Gold
Chris
Cup.
Chris Wondolowski?
No, I don't think he's going to make it. I love you, Wando. But if one of those guys breaks out, then yeah, maybe they could take a spot. But I don't see if you are down to your last 2 or 3 spots and you're like, who should I bring? I don't know why that player isn't Clint Dempsey.
Well, I love that he's got his hardcore MLS midweek action on MLS Live. Get MLS Live. Use the MLS app to follow everything.
Last night, I had my iPad. It was MLS Live. I had it up on the Apple TV MLS Live watching another game. And then I was just checking my MLS app for, you know, the other game going on. Or, like, what do they got going forward? Or what was the pass scores?
Yeah.
You know, you got to have it.
It's going to be an amazing weekend. You've got Toronto kicking us off on Friday. Heineken rivalry week on Unimas, as we said. Houston and Dallas, the battle of Pareja and Wilmer. The battle of La Ponterita and anyone else.
Magic Universe.
No one else, man. Yeah, fine. He'll be in the conversation. Saturday, Heineken rivalry week on Fox. Red Bulls versus NYCFC. And then Saturday night, a slew of games all on top of each other. So use your MLS app. Use MLS Live and then 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Seattle, Portland on Sunday to get it all finished. Thank you to Tommy McNamara and Luis Robles. And thank you to Ben Bear and Mr. Kalen Carr. And have a good rivalry week.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.